All right, we're starting a new show on Galaxy 15. This is Let's Go Get Drunk. Pretty much, for the concept is we're taking that first 5 minutes of decking where we discuss everybody's drinking and just turning it into the whole show. I have no show notes. It's just me, Rofax, and Madman. I've got my two-drink minimum. Rofax has his. Madman would have his, but he got sick, so we're going to let him off the hook and make fun of him behind his back later. So... I have no notes. I have no plan. We're just going to see where this goes. And if it works, probably do this every other week. If it doesn't work, well, then it'll give everybody something to make fun of. So I guess, how do you guys want to start? We're a little bit late starting out, but that's nothing new for us. So
I suppose we might as well start by saying what everybody's drinking.
Now, that'd be a good place to start. I've got one of my tall glasses of some of my homebrew, which, well, I say homebrew. It's a Mr. Beer kit brew is what it is. It's the Aztec kit, but I'm actually really happy with how this came out. So, it's not the hardcore homebrew. It's an easy extract kit, but it still came out really well. Dickel whiskey here, number 8 classic.
So what kind of beer is Aztec?
Well, I was actually expecting it to be a Corona knockoff, but it's more of a light ale with a little bit more flavor. So it tastes kind of like tastes like a stronger Budweiser, really. You know, not real hoppy, just kind of a American beer flavor, you know what I mean? But I'm happy with this because it's probably the clearest I've had one of my homebrews come out. I mean, it's hyper clear. It's probably because I left it in the fermenter for 3 weeks instead of two.
Yeah, I've never had the patience for that. But see, it just doesn't happen. I want to try it, and I can barely wait the 2 weeks. I usually wait 2 weeks, but I'm not going to wait 3 weeks. I just can't do it.
Well, I didn't think I put it and my all-grain batch in. I use a big tool chest to keep it all dark, and it's metal, so it doesn't really hold a lot of heat, which is good because it keeps the temperature I want. And I put both it and my all grain in at the same time, and I didn't think the all grain was done, so I just gave it all another week.
Oh, okay, it's a good strategy.
So, what have you got there, Rofaxon?
I have my homebrew, which is a Bock this time around. So, it's much darker beer than what you're drinking, but it's a nice dark beer. Low on hops, but it's got this really like sweet finish, which I'm actually very happy with. And I also, okay, I'm going to admit I bought this mostly for the bottle, but it's called Curious Traveler Shandy. I'm not usually a huge Shandy fan, but this one isn't bad. And the guy on the bottle has a mustache and a curly mustache at that. So that's about all I really needed. And you know, but before we get too far into this, let me open my cellular Android telephone and download beer judging from the App Store for 99 cents that I can properly judge these. That's a nice shameless plug, I think.
Yeah, no, the shame just went right out the window there. I guess for Madman, because you're not aware, Rofaxon put out an Android app for judging beer. And...
Nice.
It is. It's pretty simple. I mean, honestly, it's just a calculator, but I like the scale because it breaks it down by like aroma, malt, hops balance, and then you've got your appearance and your flavor and all of that. So it's a bit more in-depth than most of the scales normally are. So yeah, I'm definitely a fan of it.
Well, it certainly looks a lot better since you've updated it too.
Yeah. I figured out some stuff about how the the XML files, I don't know what they're called, but how those actually work, so the screen's not nearly as crowded. Yeah, the layout shades. Because it is pretty crowded when you started and you didn't really know what you were doing. So I changed that a little bit. And there will be more updates in the future, at least for the paid version, when I get around to it. I'm not making any promises on time frame, but I'll get around to it eventually. But I wanted to mention one of the reasons I was late. So this homebrew that I have, when I first bottled it, because it's I don't know, like maybe 3 or 4 months old now, something like that. When I first bottled it, you know, you wait 2 weeks and you drink it. And I mean, everything was perfect. Well, I won't say perfect. It scored pretty high, but not actually a perfect. But I mean, everything was pretty good and the carbonation was right on and all of that stuff. But in the last 6 weeks or so, well, maybe 3 weeks, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I guess the yeast started fermenting again for some reason. I'm not exactly sure why.
Did the yeast turn cannibalistic?
Apparently they did, because it had always been, you know, I put it in the fridge, I pop one open, and I pour it in my glass. Well, now when I pop one open, there's like a geyser of beer comes out of it. Last time, because I wasn't expecting it a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago probably, and I popped it open with a regular, like, bottle opener.
Yeah, you just opened it.
Yeah, I just opened it, and seriously, the geyser of beer was at least as tall as the bottle itself. And I was that, like, ooh.
That almost sounds like a late-stage infection.
It could be. I can't imagine what it is, because it was fine for, like, 3 months or something. Then, unfortunately, most of it's gone. And then this fourth month, it's gone insane. I don't notice any off flavors, though. I would think an infection would have some, like...
Yeah, it tastes scummy or something.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It still tastes fine. It's just... they blow up sometimes. And,
well, maybe you're hitting bottles where you've got a little bit too much priming sugar in it. Or whatever you use to prime. But.
Yeah, that's actually a good possibility because, I mean, I put it in all at once and stir it, but still, I might not stir it as well as I should, so maybe some just got extra sugar in there for whatever reason, and now I'm hitting those because it's kind of hit and miss if it's going to explode or not.
Well, at least none of the glass has actually... Of course, phone rings. Hang on a second. Rofax, and keep talking.
Oh, okay. Wasn't sure if I had to be quiet. We should just invite that person onto the show. Be like, hey, you want to drink some beers with us?
I decided to risk it and grab one.
Oh, what are you drinking?
Great Lakes Brewing Company. I really like them. A microbrew out of Ohio. I grabbed their Elliot Ness, which is an amber lager.
Okay, that could be good. So still a lighter beer, though, right?
Yes. I've tried some porters and stouts, which are about as heavy as I've gotten, and I haven't really found one that I particularly liked.
That's fair enough. It's kind of a different... I mean, it is very much a different flavor, and depends on when you drink them, too. Like, if I just got done mowing the lawn or something, drinking a stout would just... It really wouldn't feel right at all, so I don't think I'd do that. I do usually go with stouts, though, because I like stouts. Just my particular style.
Just in case we get a listener, let's go into what an infection in a beer is. You know, discussing the whole bottle possibly exploding or the fountains of fizz from an infection.
Oh, yeah. Normally the fizz will come from you just put too much sugar and the yeast keeps carbonating. But what can happen, and especially if anybody's thinking about brewing, is you have to be extremely sanitary, which isn't really my strong point, but if anything gets in the bottle, and it can seriously be a speck of something or the other. It could be usually some sort of bacteria. It could even be the vinegar bacteria, which flies carry, so don't let flies land in your beer. Or it could be any kind of bacteria, and what happens is normally the beers will eat the sugars, and then the byproduct, as long as it's anaerobic, will be alcohol. And if there's enough oxygen in there, it will just create the carbonation. But if you get a bacteria in there that maybe it eats more of the sugars that the yeast missed, because yeast doesn't eat dextrin sugars, for example, which is why I have a sweet finish. But if a bacteria were to eat those, or proteins, or even, I don't know if they could eat the yeast, but probably, they could have a byproduct of carbonation, and that could lead to, like, the bottles just, like, spraying and fountains of fizz. And normally it will give it, like, a really weird off flavor that, you know, it just tastes wrong and sour a lot of times.
That's why you say the beer is sick, because it actually tastes sick.
Yeah, it does. Now, there are some beers, and I've never made these, because it's basically getting an infection on purpose, but they're sours beers where you introduce certain bacteria, which are really quite technically an infection. You infect your beer, and then you hope the taste is good rather than bad. And it's like, that's just way too risky for me to take up.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like something I would want to try in a homebrew situation.
A lot of homebrewers do it, but no, I have no desire to try to do that.
And now for the flavoring portion of the beer, a chew.
Yes, that'd be awesome.
Now, you would just go back to checking if your beer's done the same way George Washington did. Throw a chicken in it. If it makes it to the end of the vat, the beer's not done yet.
That's still the test I use.
You use the live chicken?
Yeah, it's the only way to go. Just throw a chicken in there. No, I guess it's actually really easy for beers to get infected. Anyway, according to all the forums and stuff that I read, because you don't need that much bacteria in there to totally ruin the thing. Because yeast, I mean, they seem awfully hardy when you start a beer because they're bubbling like crazy and everything else, but apparently they're not really that hardy. And if you get a bacteria, or especially vinegar, and vinegar is more of like a problem with wine, I guess, but it will just totally outperform the yeast, and then you'll just get hop water, sour hop water.
It kind of makes sense if you think about it, though, because essentially what you're making when you make a wort is the perfect environment for, well, anything really to grow in. It's a high concentrate sugar water with various bits for flavor in them, and you know, then you're supposed to let the yeast do its job and turn it into beer. So if something else gets in there, something that's either faster than the yeast or maybe not, like, you know, your bottles that have taken a very long time to start causing problems, they may have had some kind of a minor infection the whole time, but the yeast outperformed it and it just needed that long to you know, mess it up.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. It could have been that, you know, it took three, four months just for the other bacteria to really take hold or whatever. It could be. I mean, I really don't know. But yeah, you can pretty easily kill a beer, which is why I think any sort of fermentation you're doing, like, the number one priority always needs to be sanitation. You know, use Star San or bleach if you really want to, or whatever. Use something to actually sanitize it, or you'll probably have some pretty serious problems.
Well, I actually see a lot of people say don't even use your tap water for fear of infection. They say go get bottled, you know, like a spring water or something.
You know, I actually think I might start doing that, because I've been using tap water just for the convenience, and we're on a well, so we don't even get, like, something that went through a, you know, water treatment plant. We get water from a dirty well, and it smells funny. So it's probably not the best water. And, you know, I think I can get away with sanitizing with my tap water, because there's all those chemicals in there to kill things anyway. But when it comes to, like, the bulk of the water that I'm using for the beer, I think I'm going to move to bottled water. Just because I do get some off flavors in my beer in general, and I think that might be the water, because I've noticed it more since I moved to a new house. And then secondly, just because, you know, any way to eliminate infection or make it less likely you're going to get an infection is a good thing.
Absolutely. Actually, with all my Mr. Beer that I've done 4 batches in the thing now, I've always used a bottled water, just because you don't really boil it, or not all of it anyways. Now, when I did my all grain, because all of the water that I ended up using, or almost all of it, was boiled, I just used tap, and then I used what I had left over in the bottle to top it off when I was done.
Mm-hmm.
So the measurement I'm using was, if it's going to get boiled, I can use tap. If it's not, you probably want to use the bottle, just because I'm a little paranoid about that. And the Mr. Beer fermenter is a plastic jug. And okay. I'm actually afraid to use the thing now, because I have cleaned it. And, of course, you can't scrub it because you'll put scratches in it. And I cannot get the smell out of it anymore.
Well, plastic is, I mean, you kind of think it's smooth, but plastic is actually very porous. And bacteria can pretty easily live in plastic, which is why I've kind of gone to glass, just because I want one less place for an infection to be able to start, and plastic would be an easy place to get an infection.
Right, and that's what I'm worried about, which is why I don't think I'm going to use it again. I'm not knocking Mr. Beer. I'm just saying I don't know how many times you can use their fermenters safely. I may not use it again at all. I may just hang on to it and use it like as a bottling bucket, you know, sanitize it really, really well, and then use it as a bottling bucket.
Yeah, because, and you can probably get away with that.
Yeah. But I don't think I'll ferment in it again.
Profax, have you tried aerating your water, or is your water already aerated once it comes through? Because I know that can get rid of a lot of different weird flavors.
You know, I haven't. What, blowing bubbles through it?
You can go to a hardware store and get an aerator, and it will actually fit on the end of the nozzle and should fix a lot of the weird flavor and smell of water. I didn't notice it until I left the state, because most of where I'm from uses well water, and we just aerate it naturally before shipping it out to houses, or, you know, pumping it out to houses. But when I went to Florida, they use a lot of river water and some well water, and they don't always aerate depending on which part of the state you're in. And I was noticing the water tasted strange, and sometimes it had a strange smell to it.
I may try that, because I kind of doubt my well is doing anything, because I don't live in the middle of nowhere exactly. I'm on a relatively busy road, but my house is it was built in the 30s, so it's kind of old, and I don't have a lot of neighbors. We don't have a lot of upgrades, so I doubt that there's any special equipment in there to do anything, even as simple as aerating water. So I may actually look into aerating my water and see if that makes a difference. Could at least make it, you know, better to shower in. It always sucks. You turn on the shower and it's like, the hideous water smell. I feel like I'm getting more dirty on the way out.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, you know, too, I don't know if this even matters. It might not be a good thing. I use one of those pure water filters on my faucet. So even the tap water I was going to boil is still getting filtered.
Oh, really? Now, I
don't know if that helps or not, to be honest.
I use one of those filters for, the water that I drink, but, I mean, filtering 5 gallons of water, it just sounded like an unpleasant proposal, so I was just like, I'll come out of the tap, it'll be fine.
Well, I haven't done a 5-gallon batch. My all-grain batch was a 1-gallon, so...
And I bet you'll do a 5-gallon next, now that you see how much work it is.
Well, I want to try brewing a bag, and I'm going to do that with a 1-gallon batch, because I kind of look at it like the 1-gallon batches will be good for experimenting, and when I find a recipe I really like, that's when I'll do the 5-gallon.
That makes sense, and I do that with, because I brew mead and wine once in a great while, but mostly mead and beer. With my meat, I always do the 1-gallon experimentation thing, but when it comes to beer, I just experiment with 5 gallons, and if it's gross, I'm like, I can drink 5 gallons of beer. It's not that much. It's only 5 gallons.
You just invite some people over, have a party, and it's like, here, we're getting rid of the cheap stuff first.
That's right. It's like, you can have all the beer you can drink.
See, that's when you pronounce some... That's it's like, yeah, this beer doesn't taste right. Let me print out some labels for a brand nobody will Milwaukee's Best. Here we go. We're just going to print out some Milwaukee's Best labels, and nobody will know the difference. There we go.
pretty much. You'll be good.
So, Madman, I heard you say you decided to go get a beer. What'd you go grab?
I grabbed some Great Lakes Brewing Company. I grabbed the Elliot Ness, which is an amber lager of theirs. It's got a darker color, but it's still a lighter beer.
Okay.
It has kind of like a tea afternote somehow. But it's a heartier Budweiser, and I hate using that description.
That's about
it's hard to make that a compliment.
Yeah, it is. But it's got some tea afternotes. It's a darker beer. It's still kind of there's no sediment in it. It's not like a live beer. So, you know, they pasteurized theirs, but it's darker. It's got some, like I said, tea afternotes, and it's pretty good. It's not too hoppy.
Now, what are your guys' thoughts on, like, I can't even remember the word. I already finished my first beer, so I have an excuse. microbreweries, that's the word. Microbreweries and going insane on hops. Like, you know, if you get a Sierra Nevada or even the whoever makes Fat Tire, what are they called? Anyway, I can't remember what they're called. But they came out with New Belgium. They came out with a Mothership Wit and a Ranger beer. And I like Fat Tire, so I was like, okay, I'm going to try these, whatever. They're so hoppy. I wouldn't even know if it was like potatoes versus grain, because all I could taste is hops. And personally, I feel like the microbreweries are going overboard on hops and making things hoppy for the sake of being hoppy and be like, we got 100 IBUs. That's not a good thing. Your balance is all screwed up. Well, but I want to see what you guys think about that.
I think a lot of them are doing it to try to separate themselves from the, you know, grocery store 24-pack, you know, Budweisers. They don't want to taste anything. You know, they don't want anybody describing their beer as a strong Budweiser.
Well, you could at least make it taste good.
Well, I look at it as, am I ordering a beer that's supposed to be hoppy? Like, if I'm getting an Imperial Pale Ale, I want a hoppy beer. But if I'm drinking, like, a lager, they're not generally super hoppy. So it's not that I'm getting a good beer when I'm going for a microbrew that's overhopped. It's I bought a microbrew and they're overhopping. They're making bad beer.
Yeah. That's kind of what I feel. And I was in Scotland not long ago, and they had a couple IPAs over there. And their IPA, first of all, Scottish beer is amazing. You would think, oh, Ireland, that's the one famous for beer. They make Guinness, whatever. They must have all sorts of crazy No. Guinness is so popular, it's the only thing you can get. Guinness and, you know, a couple other imports that you can get here in America and here in the States. So it's like every bar is like, we have Guinness. It's like anything local, Guinness. And it's like, yes, technically you're Ireland, it's local. But Scotland had all sorts of crazy beers. There is like, well, actually it was unfortunate because I found a beer called Brood Awakening, which is the best beer in the universe. Apparently you can only buy it in the UK and one bar in South America. So, not going to try that one again anytime soon. But anyway.
I like that. One bar in South America.
They don't do like an internet direct import business?
Unfortunately, they do not, because I'd be all about that. But no, you can't. But not even like in bars somewhere. You just cannot get it. But like, they had a lot of IPAs over there, and I try their IPAs, and they're really good. They're like, they're really hoppy. You can tell they're hoppy, but you can still taste the grains. And here with some of these microbreweries in America, it's just, it's so hoppy you can't taste anything. And yes, an IPA is supposed to be way hoppier than a normal beer. It should absolutely showcase the hops, but there's still a balance. And I think a lot of IBUs a lot of IPAs are too hoppy, and it's hard to make an IPA too hoppy because that's what they're famous for. But yeah, this hop craze is just, it just irritates me. I'm just going to make Heather beers from now on. Protest.
If you're looking for a brewing company that doesn't go too hoppy, BBC is pretty good. The Bluegrass Brewing Company. I haven't had any of their beers that were too hoppy.
I might have to check that out then. And, you know, a lot of them do a good job. I wouldn't say that, like, the majority of microbrewers are overhopped. I just say that a whole lot of them are overhopped. And I think people need, when you're talking about beer, this doesn't get into the whiskey, but when you're talking about beer, you really need to focus on that balance. And you can showcase grain, you know, a stout should showcase the grain, and a pale ale should showcase the hops a little more, and an IPA should be all about the hops. But just to get the balance, so you can see, like, because the hops complement the grains, and if you just cover up one of those flavors, you've lost half your beer. That's just a pet peeve of mine.
Well, so do you just do barley beers, or have you tried, like, Hefeweizens and a few of the wheat beers?
I have had a few of the wheat beers. I like them. I guess you'd say they're a lot less heavy, I think, generally speaking. And they're definitely good. But I do have to admit, I am very partial to stouts. I mean, I'm not going to lie, that's my favorite style. And I like the barley beers. So I'd say 80% of what I try is barley beers. But I try to broaden my horizons a little bit and you know, try the other ones. I have not brewed a wheat beer, though, because apparently there's a bunch of headache with the wheat sticking together and stopping your wort from being filtered right or whatever. So I haven't brewed it, but I've tried Hefeweizens, and they're good. They're different, and I prefer the barley beers. As long as it's not Budweiser or Coors or something. Oh, God.
Well, I kind of think that's why you see so many microbrews going nuts with the hops, is they've discovered how to make a beer that doesn't taste like, I don't know, scared water, and they just go absolutely insane with it.
It could be just a way to differentiate themselves, and I kind of understand it. You do want differentiation. A microbrewery is going to be, I'm sure everybody here will attest to it, significantly more expensive than like a Bud Light. I mean,
oh yeah,
at least double, triple, even quadruple the price. And they have to be different. They can't be the same thing. And not everybody's a pretentious beer snob like me. So,
well, you can do something different other than hops. Like a Lexington microbrew down here, they started aging some of their beers in bourbon barrels. They have like a bourbon barrel stout and a bourbon barrel ale. And the flavor characteristics you get from that are awesome.
Yeah, they're very good.
I've tried one that does that, Kentucky bourbon ale, I think.
Yep.
That's hard to find here, too. Well, where I live, that's hard to find. I would love to try that in a stout, though.
Yeah, they make a stout.
They do
a stout. It's quite good.
Oh, I need to find that. I called my local liquor store. Well, me and a friend were trying to get some, and we called our local liquor store, and they were like, the big one we have, and they were like, oh, we don't have any in, but we'll order it. It'll be here next week. So we called them next week. It's like, oh, well, that's a popular one. We'll order it, and it'll be here next week. It's so popular. Why don't you order more than one at a time? And seriously, it took us like 2.5 months before they finally got it in. And that was $14 for four bottles.
God.
That was expensive. It was good, though. I mean, I don't think it was worth $14, but it was good.
That has to be a tax in your state or something, because they're not that expensive here.
Probably. Well, you know, I don't know what it is. I know our taxes are crazy. So it could be the taxes, or it could just be this liquor store, because they know nobody else has it. So they're like, who else are they going to come to? We'll charge them whatever we want.
Yeah, I would kind of side on the your liquor store was compensating for the trouble of acquiring it.
Yeah.
So that's
they,
yeah,
they do that a lot.
No, you just need to take a beer tour and come down here.
That's what I should do.
Or at least a whiskey tour if you're going to come down here, actually. But
do you know if they have a Talisker?
I've seen it.
I have to come now. There's a law. Can't import Talisker to my state. There's a company that will mail it to you online. And you're going through it, and you're like, what state do you live in? And I was like, hey, wait, my state's not on here, because there's some dumbass liquor law where you can have every whiskey in the world except for Talisker. I was like, what the?
somebody just didn't pay off the right politician.
Yeah, that's got to be it, because it's technically a scotch, but we've got other scotches in Indiana, so why not Talisker? Because I had it when I was in Scotland, and it's my favorite scotch because it's got that really like over the top smoky flavor.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that. Madman, have you seen that around here?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I'd seen it. So, although talking whiskey, what I've got right now is this George Dickel Tennessee whiskey. It's classic number 8. And there's a story behind why I have this particular whiskey, because I went in the liquor store the other day looking to get something for the show to try, something I hadn't tried, mm-hmm. right? And I go in there, and they just happened to be showcasing. They had somebody obviously from this company's marketing department, right, was there. And just to prove that I am a sucker, it was a cute chick in a low-cut dress. So, and she was handing out free samples. So cute chick, low-cut dress, handing out free whiskey. Yeah. So I'm a sucker, but it's not bad. I liked it. It's better than like a Jim Beam or a Jack, but it's not up there with say a Woodford's or a Eagle Rare. So certainly not a bad sipping whiskey. I wouldn't mix it. Of course, I don't really like to mix whiskey much anymore, anyways. But
Yeah, I probably wouldn't mix it either, you know, because I'm not a girly pansy man.
Oh. That's funny. When the girl asked me if I wanted to cut it with anything, I looked at her. I'm like, you don't cut whiskey.
Nice.
Because, she was offering some Sprite there to cut it with. Like, no.
She was just like, no, thank you. I'm a real man. Well, I hate cutting whiskey. Jameson's my personal favorite whiskey, and I was taking a tour of the Jameson factory, and they don't do it anymore because they're desperate for tourism money. But they were like, the tour guide was like, 15, 20 years ago, if you went into like an Irish bar and you asked for Jameson mixed with something, or even sometimes Jameson like on the rocks instead of neat, they would like kick you out of the bar and refuse to serve you. And I was like, that's right, because you don't mix whiskey.
And just take you out back and beat the crap out of
there. Now you deserve it.
My sister is currently dating a guy who used to be a bartender, and he told this amazing story. If they ever had a guy come in and order anything that was ever perceived as a girly drink, like a Smirnoff, they would, it was like a Smirnoff or a Mike's Hard Lemonade, they would go insane with the fruit decorations.
Oh, nice.
Like, you know, cut up the oranges, the little, the fruit peel, ribbons. I mean, go absolutely freaking insane with it. And actually, he told us how they had just finished cutting up some pineapple for some mixer. And so they took the empty core of pineapple where they had cored it, and put that around the bottle, and then put all the little umbrellas and shit all over it. Then handed it to the guy who's like, what the fuck is this? So that's your drink, sir.
Nice. Now, I have to admit, I occasionally get girly drinks, but mostly just to screw with people. Because you'll get weird looks doing this. Yeah, everyone at home, try this. You go to a bar, and you order something like, you order a Guinness. And then they come around because, it's a good, like, stereotypical manly drink. Then they come around and it's like, can I get you another Guinness? And you're like, no, this time I think I'll have an apple teeny. And that's great. I love doing that. I have a few friends who won't drink with me anymore.
Now, see, if I wanted to screw with people, I would reverse the order. I'd get the apple teeny first and then start ordering the hard shit.
I've done it both ways. It's really equally funny no matter how you do it. But I still won't mix whiskey. I hate the idea. So now, whiskey or scotch? Any preference on that?
I like them both.
I prefer bourbon over really either.
Okay, so now what is it about the bourbon that just really jumps out or that you really love?
I like the smoky flavor of a bourbon.
I can see that. See, I'm really torn because, again, Jameson is what I normally drink, and it's a very clean flavor. I mean, you get hints of the oak barrel in there, but it's an extremely clean flavor, and I like that. But I tried another whiskey recently, and if we keep doing the show, I might have to have it on the show for a proper review. But it's called Connemara, I think, and it's technically an Irish whiskey, but it's really a Scotch because they roast the barley with peat. And I really like the peat flavor. It's because I know a bourbon, you know, like you said, a bourbon is smoky, but Scotches are peaty, and it's nothing like smoke. But like when I was in Scotland, they fueled their houses with peat, and when you drink the whiskey, you can like taste the same smell that you had when you're going through some like Scottish village or something. And it's just a bizarre flavor, but I've really grown to like it quite a little bit. But I don't do much bourbons. I have to say, I don't drink a lot of bourbon. Should try some.
Growing up in Kentucky, I was pretty much surrounded by it, so I've tried several dozen varieties. And don't get me wrong, Jameson's a good whiskey, and I do actually drink Jameson also. Mm-hmm. And I guess if you're in a mood for Scotch, nothing quenches like Scotch. But if I'm going whiskey, I'm generally getting a bourbon.
So what, now you've tried a few. What's like the single best? I'm going to try just one bourbon. What one do I try?
If you're going for what would be reasonable in most people's price range, Four Roses does a single barrel that is awesome. It's won several awards. And you don't want to get the small batch. The small batch is still a good whiskey, but if you're wanting the full, really good bourbon flavor for fairly cheap, you want to get the single barrel Four Roses. I generally drink Woodford Reserve, which is also a pretty reasonably priced whiskey.
Yeah, Woodford's is generally what I go for if I want a good bourbon.
Keep that in mind. I don't want to get stuck in my ways and only try two whiskeys in my entire life, even if they are really good whiskeys.
I was looking. The closest place for you to get that stout, I'm thinking, is depending on which part of Indiana you're in. Indianapolis actually carries bourbon barrel stout at most of their places.
Oh, really? Okay.
And if you're closer to the south, just head to Kentucky.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is we're good when it comes to Gen Con.
Yes, right. I'm actually at
He's mapping out where to get where when we go.
Yes,
to Gen Con.
I actually am at their website looking at where I can get their boats.
Very nice.
But Indianapolis is listed. We should be good.
All right.
All over Indianapolis will be playing Ingress and looking for specific boozes.
They should build that into Ingress. Shut down portals by like drinking a beer or whiskey or something.
I can see turning Ingress awesome. Into a drinking game.
That could happen.
Take out a resonator, take a shot.
Every time you drop a buster, take a shot.
And we're in the hospital. So yeah. It's like, how many bottles did they go through?
Well, they were assaulting a level 8 portal. They went through quite a few.
There were hookers over there just telling them, begging them to stop. I mean, so yeah. It was. Yeah. I don't know where I'm going with this now. I think the hookers joke just kind of killed the conversation.
Murdered it.
So, I don't know. Like,
let's discuss the morality of hookers now.
No way, wrong show.
That's true.
No, I don't know. Usually if I want, you know, a bourbon, I go for the Woodfords. But if I want a Scotch, I'm usually going for a Johnny Walker Black, or Double Black is what I got last time. And I really liked that.
I haven't actually tried that. I'm just recently getting into scotches because I don't know. Someone bought me a scotch for like my bachelor party, I think it was. And And I tried it, and it was okay. And I have no idea what kind of scotch it was, but it wasn't a very good one. Because I remember thinking, it's drink, whatever. But now that I've tried a couple other scotches, there's actually some really good ones out there. So I may have to try a few more scotches now. And now I do. This is a friend of mine brews his own scotch. Oh, no, whiskey. It's not scotch. It's whiskey. Brews his own whiskey.
Don't you have to age it for like at least 3 years before it's drinkable or something like that?
Yeah, and probably closer to 8 or 10. So he's doing his own home-brewed scotch, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to have some scotch for everyone to try in 10 years. And it's like,
So if you don't forget where you buried it.
Right. It's like, okay, so I do wine once in a while, and I hate doing wine because it takes between 1 and 3 years to age properly. I was like, I can't wait 1 to 3 years. That's absurd. I'm not going to wait 10 years for my – and what if you screw it up?
You won't know till 2023.
It's like you could have made how many other batches equally screwed up because you wouldn't know because you didn't have your – you didn't try it till 10 years later. I applaud him for being patient, but it's like, no, I'm not going to do that.
What else involved in doing homebrew whiskey? Because that's not – I mean, I know people do moonshine, but
– Yeah. I don't know how
I've
he does
really
it.
Looked into it.
Because going on some tours of, like, distilleries or whatever, it looks pretty advanced. I suppose you could do all of it. And, I mean, he's got the oak barrel to age it in. He only needs one because he's only doing one barrel. I guess you just need a still.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about the prices of it, though, I mean, I guess it could be economical to do it if you're patient enough.
I suppose.
You know, $20 a bottle for something decent versus, you know, you've got the whole barrel when you're done.
And also, if you're patient enough. Yeah.
Well, if all you're doing is aging it, you just got to throw it in the basement and forget about it.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated a process.
Now, I still don't want to do all the work to start it and then wait 10 years to get a payout.
Eastern Kentucky high schools, they teach you how to make it in chemistry class.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
we'll see if you did it in
the
high school.
Of blindness in the population. Literally, they had so much of a problem with people making bad moonshine that they figured it was more economical to teach them the correct way in high school rather than having a large blind population.
You know, I think that law makes a lot of sense.
That is absolutely fantastic. I wholeheartedly support this.
And what's bad, modern moonshines are mostly just sugar whiskey. They're not using corn or any grains that normally were used to make whiskey, so it's more of a rum.
I can see that. Sugar, it's easy to make anything out of sugar.
It's easy to make, and you can buy 40 and 50-pound bags of it at a Sam's, and no one looks at you weird.
Yeah, that's true, too. So, well, I mean, you could just buy lots of Mountain Dew and make some moonshine out of that.
Oh, good God.
I want to try that now.
I did. Now it's not moonshine, but I did make Mountain Dew wine. Oh yeah, that was amazingly good.
Really?
And by good, I mean horrible. No, it was the worst stuff I've had in my life. Oh God!
Got me thinking about weird things to use for priming sugars because I don't know where else you would use it if you're trying to do it with a beer.
Oh God! Don't make a Mountain Dew beer.
I'm afraid the bottle would explode, like, the next day.
Well, no. Now, okay, so as long as you keep it under 20% of your ABV, contributing towards your ABV, there's some beers that use, you know, sugar or whatever to get a higher ABV. I've even done the trick before where, you know, you add a pound of sugar or something to get a higher ABV. And as long as you keep it under 20%, it doesn't usually completely ruin the flavor. Yeah, anything over that, you can start to taste it. So, you know, really, if you do like 30% of your alcohol coming from Mountain Dew, there would be a hint of Mountain Dew, certainly.
Well, I would be afraid. I mean, if you didn't put it in the wort, like to, you know, like you're saying, to try to bump up the APB. If you tried to use it like as a priming sugar, I'd be afraid it would actually kill the yeast. I mean, people have called in to try to scam the Mountain Dew, is it Pepsi or Coke that makes Mountain Dew?
Pepsi.
There's a story that floats around that people tried to call Pepsi and say, hey, we found a dead mouse in the Mountain Dew, and they laughed at him because the mouse would have dissolved.
Oh, nice.
It's like, no, you didn't. It wouldn't have survived. Don't worry about it. So,
well, yeah.
It's like you wouldn't have been able to identify the animal. Right. But that can be said of any soda, not just Mountain Dew.
Oh, I know. It's just funny. Anything you can drink and then dump on the floor to clean it. I mean,
yeah. But imagine, okay, like when I made the wine, the yeast survived somehow. It was a hardy strain. Imagine Mountain Dew with absolutely no sweetness and alcoholic and aged.
I think I just opened my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did when I drank it. I think I gave some to Lore too, and he'll back me up. It got you drunk, but that's about all it did. And it wasn't a pleasant trip.
See, so now what you're actually telling me there is Slothin has saved some of this, and he's going to be bringing it with him for the sipper at the Vita.
I hope that's the case.
So when he pours you something that looks mildly green and smells alcoholic, probably should just run.
I would just go with use orange juice and lemon concentrate as primers if you're trying to make a Mountain Dew anything.
It would actually probably be better than using the actual Mountain Dew. Because I think all the chemicals and stuff in there gave it a really weird flavor too. And not the good kind of weird. Not like, oh, this is different.
Let's see, you're putting phosphoric... No, was it phosphoric acid isn't what's in sodas?
I think so, yeah.
You're putting...
I don't remember.
A weird acid and high fructose corn syrup in whatever it is you're making if you're going with most American sodas.
Yeah, I think you're right. Orange juice, lemon extract, and actual real sugar. You'd probably get something much, much better. Ooh.
Try Mexican Mountain Dew.
Oh, the ones that
uses
real sugar.
The real sugar, yeah. Now, you know, for a bit of a comparison here, I made onion wine once. Okay, that's wine made of onions and potatoes. Yeah, it's as good as it sounds. That was better than the Mountain Dew wine.
I'm confused how you didn't end up with vodka, but...
It was, in essence, it was undistilled vodka.
Why would you use those two ingredients to make wine? Was it a bet?
No, that's why I'm making pea wine. And pea the vegetable. You know, like peas in a can?
Yeah.
I've already had my friends.
Oh.
They've actually offered to pay for it, too.
I've tried tomato wine.
Don't piss your money away on regular wine. Ooh, raisin wine.
Orange raisin wine. That was actually pretty decent.
That's probably better than onion wine.
I'm going to say yes, it is.
What can I say? I wanted to see if it could be done.
You can ferment anything with sugar in it, so any plant can be fermented.
I wanted to prove that beyond any doubt. With potatoes and onions.
I'm just willing to take your word for it, you know?
Hey, now, when I make my pea wine, though, I'll sell you guys a bottle. Don't piss away your money on crappy wine. Get Rofaxin's pea wine.
Put a toilet on the label.
I think I will. I've actually sold every single bottle from the batch I haven't made yet.
Damn.
I don't know.
I actually bought a bottle of beer because it was called horse piss, so I could see people buying beer wine or pea wine.
It's like they fermented what? Oh fuck, we gotta look at this.
It's from a BBC Bluegrass Brewing Company. It's actually a pretty decent beer if anyone wants to try horse piss.
Well, with a name like that, how could you resist?
I couldn't. I was like, man, that's something you've gotta try once, even if it sucks.
Oh yeah. So well, one last thing I wanted to ask you about Rofaxin, and it's because I've been thinking I want to try doing some mead, and you say you actually do that.
Yeah, I do.
So just 1,000 foot, what's the overview? What do you do for that?
Okay, first of all, you can be encouraged because it's a lot easier than bear. Okay. So you get like, I think it's 3 pounds of honey to 1 gallon of water. Because I normally do it 5 gallons at a time, and I use like 15 pounds of honey, I think it is.
Okay.
12 or 15. I think it's 15. Yeah, so you're doing... Yeah, no, I'm definitely right. 3 pounds of honey, 1 gallon of water, and then you add... you have to add acid blend. They have acid blends in most brew stores, and just follow the directions. It's like 3 tablespoons to a gallon or something, but just follow the directions and aim higher rather than lower. Because honey is so sterile that there's a lot of stuff not in there. And then I always add a yeast nutrient and sometimes a yeast energizer just to get it started. And then you throw in yeast. Champagne is a popular one. Whatever company you prefer, their champagne yeast. Oh, don't boil it. Boiling it ruins the flavor. Get the water, hot tap water, not boiling, but really hot tap water.
So you can mix in the honey without it just being a block at the bottom of it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you pour that in, stir it really vigorously, throw in your other stuff and put it in a bottle and let it sit for, I don't know. If you're doing a gallon, maybe 3 months. If you're doing a full 5 gallon, 6 months, then you rack it. You just siphon it from your carboy to the other place to get rid of the sediment, let it sit another 6 months for 5 gallons, 3 months for 1 gallon, then bottle it with corks, set them on their side and let them age for however long you feel like. 3 months, it's drinkable. 6 months, it's a little better. A year, it gets a lot better. 2 years is really what you want to aim for. After it's been sitting in the bottle 2 years, you're probably about as good as you're going to get. Then that's all there is to it. It's actually really easy.
Well, it sounds like a much easier brew and a hell of a lot longer fermentation period.
Yeah. Well, and that's what it is. Beer is great because from brew day, in about a month, you're drinking a beer.
Yeah.
But that brew day's a pain to get through. But with mead, you're just basically mixing honey and water in a 3-to-1, 3 pounds, 1 gallon ratio, but it's like 3 years from when you start it, you finally get a drink at. It's like easy, but takes forever.
I can see that right now. You're moving. What are these bottles down here? Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. The last move I did. Okay, so I've got a mead system going, so I've always got mead for bloat and stuff, and I've always got mead in a carboy. So I was moving. I was like, "Oh crap! I have 2 carboys. Is this even legal to move?" Because they were the big like 5 gallon carboys full of mead, and I was like, "Damn it! If I get pulled over, A, it's probably illegal for some open container law. B, how am I going to explain why I have 10 gallons of alcohol in my back seat?"
We're launching the DeLorean, sir. It'll be fine.
Yeah. So I don't like moving anyway, and I'll probably never move again because I've got a lot of bottles downstairs, and God, it sucks to move a lot.
The response is, "Officer, I can't drink it for another 2 years, so we're good."
That's right.
See, it's not actually alcohol at this point yet, sir. I just want to point this out.
It's not alcohol yet.
Well, I guess technically it is. It is technically alcohol, but since you all don't get all bent out of shape over rubbing alcohol, I think you can...
It's like, try some fresh, not aged. You'll understand I wouldn't look back there and drink it after you try some.
Here you go, sir. Have a cup.
It's really nasty before it's aged. And if you do it in a gallon batch, it actually does age a little bit faster. So, and plus, it's a good place to get your recipe down with a little bit of experimentation. But yeah, I like mead because it's easy to make, but it takes forever to finally get done.
Well, still, it might be something worth looking into. I mean, mead is interesting to me because it's like I never see it anywhere to just buy it and try it.
Yeah, I don't get that. There is a place called New Day Meadery, which apparently has some really good meads, but I can't say from experience. I haven't tried them. But like Oliver Winery has a mead, and it's just crap. I don't think it's even a mead. I think they flavored a white wine with honey.
Oh, yeah.
I think I remember reading that somewhere. I wouldn't swear to that, but if that's not what it is, it's just crap.
You have to look at the back of the label. Most of the meads you can get at a store say mead-flavored wine.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And a mead-flavored wine is not a mead. They're not even kind of the same thing. It's just completely different. And I really like mead. I think it's really good. It's one of the oldest. Well, beer and mead are pretty much the oldest two drinks out there. Like the ancient Egyptians actually had both of them. And I mean, I think there's even in Mesopotamia like allusions to beer.
Beer so, predates bread.
And rightly so.
There are older records of us having recipes for beer than for bread.
See, now getting some of those Egyptian recipes for beer and mead would be something fun to do.
You know, there's a guy, I listen to a podcast that gets into some weird brewing stuff on occasion, and there's a guy who looked up those old recipes, and he's actually made them again, like the beer recipe from the Egyptian tome or whatever. And it's a little different because they didn't use hops. Hops is a new thing. They'd use like heather would be one thing, not for the Egyptians, but like heather would be something if you're in Europe or yeah. Just anything to better it. But yeah, this guy like found the old recipes and he like recreated them and some of the ones from like ancient Egypt. And I really want to try those beers.
How would you get the right yeast though? I mean, would the right yeast still exist?
No, it wouldn't. And they talked about that. He said he read about it and he just imagined from our current yeast strains what would probably be the closest. So it's not going to be the same beer the Egyptians were drinking, but everything besides the yeast would be correct. And you just do as close as you can on the yeast.
I gotcha.
You might want to try something called Midas Touch. You can get it at a lot of liquor stores. Some anthropologists just took a scrubbing from a cup and tried to recreate what was in it. I don't think the cup was properly washed because it has characteristics of wine, mead, and beer. I just don't think they washed it between drinking those three things.
Probably not, but still, it's a neat idea.
But it's called Midas Touch, and it's not bad.
Huh. Okay, I might have to see if I can find some of that at some of the stores around here for the next time we do one of these.
If you're looking for it around here, Chuck's and I think Liquor Barn.
Well, you know what's if you mix mead and ale, it's if you've got the right ale, especially it can be really good. So I don't normally suggest mixing alcohols, but you know in this particular case, sometimes mixed alcohols are quite good together.
There are a couple that I like. Have you ever tried a black and tan?
Yes, and that is actually really good.
Black and tans and black velvets are good. Black velvet.
What's the other thing in velvet?
It's Guinness and woodchucks.
Woodchuck, that's right. Yeah, I've had that too, and that is really good. I thought that was a snake bite. What's a snake bite?
I think it goes by multiple names.
So oh, that could
on
be
where
it.
You're ordering it.
Okay, that could be it. And there's another one that's Guinness and Har. No, it's not Har. Guinness and something else, some other bass.
If you're gonna do an Irish car bomb, it's Guinness, Bailey's, and Jameson.
That doesn't sound so good. I'll skip on that. Guinness and bass is the other one that sometimes they mix together, and that's a good one.
That's a black and tan.
Oh, I thought a black and tan was Guinness and something else. Yeah, it shows you how much I pay attention to the names. No, but all of those are actually really good. It's interesting because if they do it right, it's like one on top and one on the bottom, so you have like layers of flavor of the different beers, but then they also blend together, especially in the middle area. It's an interesting idea. You can mix beer as long as you don't mix whiskey, I'm fine. Because that would go too far.
I'm just not even going to dignify that one with a response.
You don't want to try Jameson and Woodford's? Because that would be terrible.
I don't know. It sounds weird.
That would be terrible. I can tell you right now, it's going to be terrible.
It probably would be.
I've never tried it, but it would be terrible.
As long as you mix alcohols with alcohols of their same variety, you're fine. Not like whiskey and Coke. You know what's interesting though, like whiskey, and there's always the debate between like blended whiskeys versus not blended whiskeys. But like Jameson, for example, they buy all the old oak barrels from what's the really popular one?
Jack.
Yes, Jack Daniels. Yeah. And they say that, you know, you're not gonna taste Jack in your Jameson. But because they have all these whiskey barrels from Jack Daniels, and there's even some famous Italian wine company where they get these big giant crates from, they say that just extremely subtle nuances from the flavor left in these barrels from different alcohol actually adds just a slight touch of something special to the Jameson. And I think that's interesting because most like bourbons, I think bourbons have to use a fresh barrel, a fresh oak barrel, and as soon as they're done with it, they can't use it again. They have to get rid of it. But it's kind of an interesting mindset. Like, do you want the fresh is the best, or do you want something that just gives these really imperceptibly slight notes of other products, whiskeys and wines both, to add something even more to your whiskey? Yeah, they all use barrels.
I'm kind of a purist. I do like what Lexington did with the idea of we're going to add something to the beer by using a whiskey barrel. But when I'm going with bourbon, I think I want straight bourbon, just traditional.
I think it makes a lot of sense because you can kind of say, well, I'm not getting anything from anybody else. I'm really just tasting what they wanted in there. But I like the idea of reusing these other barrels and getting just an imperceptibly small hint of these other things. And I think it's also kind of cool that the whiskey industry, for example, is so interconnected. If Jack Daniels went out of business, Jameson would too. And they wouldn't because they have multiple people feeding into them. But everything like fits together in this like ridiculously complex jigsaw where the bourbon companies are absolutely necessary for the whiskey, for the places like Jameson to exist. But on the other hand, the bourbon places couldn't really stay in business because their losses would be huge if they weren't selling those barrels to somebody else. And it's just a really neat system that has sort of grown and evolved over the years between these different whiskey companies. And if any one whiskey took total dominance of the market, it would be detrimental to itself.
That's normal of most free markets, though.
Yeah, you're right. It's just this is an example, I guess, where you can see it really easily. It's like all of these products need to exist. You can't have a monopoly, and you can easily look at it and see exactly why that's the case.
Well, alcohol is interesting because outside of beer, it's actually very difficult to develop a monopoly. Just because the production of the product is so involved, you know, most wines take years, and whiskeys, you know, you're looking 5 to 10 years to age them properly. You know, it's really difficult to say that, you know, there's a lot of it floating around out there. Don't get me wrong. They make a ton of it. But for the amount that's consumed versus the amount that's made, it'd be really rough to see one brewery supplying everybody just because of how hard it is to make some of this stuff. And I don't know how much background noise that just was, but I decided I needed pretzels because I'm on my third shot of whiskey here. Bringing the bottle in here so I could read the label and accurately tell you about this, you know, story of the low cut dress and why I bought this whiskey was actually a bad idea. Because that means I'm not going to be running out for a while.
It's true. That's true. Yeah, I know. I'm almost out. I'm texting my wife to see if she'll bring me a beer. I don't know how likely that is. I love doing stereotypical male chauvinist pig things because it's kind of out of character for me, so it's fun to do once in a while.
See, I actually am a stereotypical chauvinist pig.
Okay,
so.
Okay.
So get in the kitchen and make me a sandwich.
That's right. I punch her in the face to show her I love her.
Yeah, what do you tell a woman with two black eyes?
Nothing. Her husband already told her twice.
There you go.
Now we're all going to burn in hell.
So the hate mail can come to morps at galaxy15radio.com.
Yes.
And if you want, we can set up hate mail addresses for both Rofax and a Madman if they need them at galaxy15radio. It's not a big deal if they need them. So,
just remember, if you're sending me hate mail, also send me a boob shot.
There you go.
The only way I'm going to guarantee that I'll read it.
So you're going to get all these pictures of man boob. And
don't give them ideas.
That was the whole point.
Now he's never going to check his hate mail. That should be a thing.
That'd be fun to do. Just check your regular reading of the hate mail.
Yeah. I think there should be a special server. You know, you've got Hotmail. Okay, this is a really dumb play on words. You could have hate mail. Get your mail sent to hatemail.com. Like whatever at hatemail.com.
I'll register that right fucking now.
I'm going to find out. Now, if you search it, somebody will probably... All right, let me check.
Actually, I'm just going to type it into the little bar up here, www.hatemail.com.
Oh, man, my internet's slow. I don't even know how I'm talking to you guys with an internet like this. Uh-oh, I think something's coming up.
Yeah, it exists.
It exists.
Mail. It's got some related searches here. Mail order brides, help desk software, medical alert, new Hindi song. Yeah, this is a parked domain.
Oh, damn it. That means we can't register it. Yeah, it's still loading on my end.
Not much to load. It looks like somebody started to set it up and maybe get a co, you know, like a, I wonder if you can get like a .il, register a .il.
All the mail order brides are from Russia. If I want variety in my mail order brides.
Yeah, really? Stop being racist, mail order brides. Okay, it's finally open.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Wait. I can also do Jewish dating.
I don't know, man. Those Russian mail order brides seem kind of, you know, seem like a scam. Last time I tried, the damn thing was dead when it showed up.
Oh, God.
Phone calls in the box.
I don't know. I didn't pack it.
Wait, I don't understand. Intentionally or not intentionally? If you want it dead, I'm not here to judge. Curling irons aren't just for women. Wait, was that too far?
And this is going to be a highbrow drinking show.
That's right.
See, this
is
the problem if you're drinking while you're commentating on the drink.
Oh, okay. I actually
highbrow shows on G15 at this point.
Oh, they're all highbrow.
Grab a shock top.
My favorite thing. I've got a friend who is a police officer, so. He comes across his fair share of interesting stories. And speaking of Russian mail order brides, there's this guy, and he apparently signed up for it or whatever somehow. I think he got an email, and some girl was like, "Oh, I'm from Russia, and I just want to get away from my evil country and come over to your country." And I never understood those emails until now. He actually fell for it. And he was like, "Oh, I just need like $500 for my, or $700 or whatever, however much. I just need so much money for my plane ticket over here." And he totally faxed her the money. Then, you know, he's like, "Okay, meet me at the airport." Hours later, called him up and he's like, "Oh, I'm almost there. I just need a taxi cab over. Just a Federal Union me a couple hundred more dollars and I'll be there in like 2 hours." He totally did it. He FedExed her like something like $2,000 by the time it was all over, because she was a Russian girl trying to escape Russia, and she desperately fell in love with the fat guy who lived in his mom's basement. And it's like, really? People actually fall for those things.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got some family that we had to explain that the people on Facebook who have the supermodels for the avatar,
yeah,
they're not real.
And I just don't quite see how you would think they were. It's like, oh, look, the supermodel wants to be friends with me. Oh, she wants to send me pictures. All I need to do is give her my phone number and social security number.
I've had
She's
people
so friendly.
I've had people actually walk into my office with like these spam emails of send us all your information and we'll send you $15,000 or some bullshit like that. Mm-hmm. The one I'm specifically thinking of was a bullshit one that was going around claiming that the oil companies are sending out settlements because of the oil leak down in the Gulf.
Nice.
And this guy was absolutely convinced that if he sent these people his banking information, he'd get like I think it was a $15,000 settlement check for his share of the environmental damage. And yeah, it's like, no, dude, this is a scam. Really? Because it looks so... No, it's a scam. And he had a few other people who were convinced. And I mean, I'm wondering if he already gave them their information before he came in and asked us about
it.
Because he was... you're saying it couldn't be real at all? No, this is a scam. Here, why don't you let me show you the first three pages of Google when I Google the first line of the email. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like with the internet, it's hard to do anymore. It's just... copy the first line and paste it into Google. And then you usually get all sorts of heads saying like, oh, this is a scam, this is a scam, this is a scam. But no, people totally believe it. And I just assumed that like some guy tried it and put everybody on some auto mailing list 15 years ago and then realized it doesn't work. But no, it actually works.
Well, and that's the thing, is it just keeps on going. They wouldn't do it if it didn't work, because emails are effectively free. So if they send out 10,000 emails and get one response, they've made money.
Yeah. So, I just don't understand how they still get one response. It's like, no.
People are stupid and gullible.
No, you did not win. This another guy my friend came across. He won like the Brazilian lottery, which was really good luck, because he never even entered it. But that wasn't enough to stop him. And all he had to do was pay like $1,500 to get the processing and taxes taken care of. Then they're going to mail him $1,000,000. So it's a great deal.
Just take that out of my winnings. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I think. It's like, okay, just take it out of my winnings and mail the check to me. Since I've obviously entered the lottery, you'll have my address. Well, yeah, just go ahead and send that. But no. And the guy totally sent off $1,500. And I was like, okay.
My favorite with that right now is the fake FBI virus. And there's a couple of variations. I've talked about them on Decking. There's a couple of variations on them where they they say, basically, we caught you looking at highly illegal porn. And you can send us a $500, well, actually, I think they say $499 settlement via Greenpack.
Yeah.
Because the government uses Greenback or PayPal.
Of course they do.
And
we'll and the government makes it $499 instead of $500.
Uh-huh. Because, you know, anybody else has ever gotten off a federal indictment for anything by giving the government $500. I mean, they're hard up for cash, but come on.
Yeah. I know.
We're way off topic here.
I'm going to finish my second beverage.
What's that, Madman?
I said I just started my second beverage.
What's your second?
It's a Shock Top Honeycrisp Apple Wheat. What do you think about using fruit as primers for fermentation?
You know, I used to be very against fruit and beers because I was like, no, it's beer, not fruit drinks. But I've actually had that beer, and it's actually really good.
I would like to point out, fruits are some of the oldest primers used in beer. So... drinking a fruity beer, you're drinking a beer that could be thousands of years old.
I don't know.
Just, bad just, after 1,000 years.
But just pouring a Snapple in as your priming sugar is probably not the
You know, it's kind of a cool idea because you've kind of got the all natural thing going, but I think it'd be hard to control. You know, how do you know you got just enough apples in there to do just enough fermentation? How well can we say, okay, this fruit has X amount of sugar, so you don't get bottle bombs or flat beer? That would be my challenge.
What I would do is I would like half the amount of sugar you're getting from your fruit, and then go for a more traditional source. You know, your primer, your regular priming sugars, or brown sugar, or whatever, honey, for the other kind of half of your sugar. That way, if you do get a little too much, you're less likely to have an exploding bottle. I mean, you still might get a fountain when you open the thing,
right?
But at least, I mean, you're not going to get as much flavor out of that. But you really only kind of want a hint of it, anyways. You don't want it like overpowering.
It doesn't take much to check the sugar content of a piece of fruit.
It well, might not. I don't know how to do it. But how do you know you're getting all the sugar in the beer? I think would be the other challenge. I mean, you're not just going to chuck an apple in there and hope it's enough.
Well, no, I think
run it through a blender first.
Yeah. Yeah, you puree it. But I think what most modern people do, or modern brews do, is they use an extract to get the whatever fruit flavor, just for
generally they do
nothing else.
All and the thing with fruit is it's risky. And now I haven't made a fruit beer yet, but I made a strawberry mead once, and I've made a blueberry mead too. The blueberry mead was from concentrate, you know, the blueberry concentrate you get from certain. It turned out great. But the strawberry mead, I was like, oh, I'm going to do it all natural. I'm just going to throw these strawberries in the must and let them get their strawberry flavors in there, let everything age. I'll rack it off so I don't have a bunch of gross sediment in there. And I did all of that, and it tasted like rotten strawberries because fruit rots really quick. And that rotten flavor will mask the, like, nice, delicate fruit flavors. It's just... absolutely. So you have to be careful when you're doing it, and honestly I wasn't being careful. I'm sort of lackadaisical in my approach to brewing, which is a bad idea, but I am. And yeah, I had rotten strawberry mead, and it wasn't very good. It was not very good at all.
Well, we're about to hit an hour 20 here. I think that's fairly good for a first show, and we're still going pretty strong. So
yeah, I think that's a fair stopping point.
I think we're going to stop at rotten strawberry mead.
Yeah, and, it was delicious.
You know, we'll pick this up again in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to try to get some of that. What'd you call it? Midas Touch?
Yes, Midas Touch.
I want to get some of that for next time. I do think we'll keep this show to be every other week, just so I don't kill my liver.
Yeah, and I can't afford to do it every single week, so I second that every other week idea.
Yeah, this is not the cheapest hobby in the world, is it?
No. Well, I mean, we could all judge Milwaukee's best in Coors Light. Yeah.
Pabst Blue Ribbon. Shit. We can grab some right. Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yep, it's shit. Well, you know, we might do that. We might do a slummer. You know, just get the cheapest crap you can find.
Yes.
Oh, so it's like 55 cents for a case of Natty Light?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I love about cheap beers? And this really is my last comment. Like, I was watching the television a couple days ago, and they're advertising some Coors Light. And they're like, oh, look how advanced our can is. It turns blue, and it has flavor spouts. And look how fast you can drink it with our aerated technology. It's like, okay. You're selling beer, and you're advertising the can. Does anybody see a problem with this?
I don't. Maybe. They don't know how to make beer anymore. They just know how to make Coors Light.
Yes. It's like, seriously, you're advertising the can.
Well, what else can you advertise? It's not like they have any flavor to the damn thing.
I would to point out that a lot of the stuff we call microbrews are actually made by Budweiser and Coors Light.
Actually, you've got a good point, and some of it's actually pretty good. They know how
but they're
brew.
Not making those out of the vats that make the regular, you know, light ale.
Same building, same different production line, but yeah, you can switch the vats right over. They are going through a different process, but that's just because it's a different beer.
I just think it proves that they can make beer if they want to. They just choose not to. That's probably because most people don't like beer. It's like, this tastes like something. I don't like it.
Prohibition killed beer tasting in America.
Yeah, it did. It also killed the apple orchards.
I did not know that.
We used to have a huge variety of apples, like just all these different breeds of apples. And Prohibition came along and hard cider was a popular thing to drink. And the crazies decided they just like start massacring is probably not the right word, but start chopping down apple orchards so people wouldn't brew them into alcohol. And we lost a significant amount of breeds of apples. See, nothing good happened from Prohibition.
My one of my favorite documentaries is How Beer Saved the World.
I love that.
And you know, you watch that, then you listen to the people who talk about Prohibition, mm-hmm. and it's just like, okay, really? Granted, I mean, how beer saved the world, it's a bit of a stretch for some of the claims they're making. But
yeah. But I did love the duck pond thing they did. That was crazy.
Oh, the butt duck pond beer.
Yes.
If I get into microbrewing, I might have to try that.
It's crazy. Just took dirty, nasty water from a duck pond, brewed it up, perfectly safe.
You know, Madman, it's not as hard as it... I'll tell you what. I was thinking that tomorrow I might go get the stuff and try to do bag brewing. And if you're up for it tomorrow, I'll show you the full process.
If I'm awake, I might do it.
So
you're not going to start them on extract? Because extract's a lot easier.
Yeah. I don't have a 5-gallon fermenter right now, though.
You make really good beer on it. Oh, that's true. That's true.
I could get a 5-gallon. It's not a big deal.
Well,
but I mean, extract
in a bag's not horrible.
No.
It's not too hard.
It's got to be easier than what I ended up doing last time with the all grain, with the two strainers and the spaghetti strainer trying to catch all the damn grain.
Oh, well, you know, if you've got $5,000 to drop, you can buy a pretty nice pre-setup thing, and all grain's not too bad either. I just assume you have $5,000. I mean,
well, you know, let me just go over here and cash out some stock.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'd rather build my own anyways. So.
Well, the catch 22 is you have to sell your liver for the $5,000, but then you don't have a liver to drink the beer.
There you go.
Hey, you have two kidneys.
Hey, that's
and
true.
They go for a couple million on the black market.
There you go.
Sell my kidney, get a homebrew setup going.
All right. Nice. Well, that's a better place to stop than a rotten strawberry meat.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So I'm going to wrap it up here because I have yet to make proper bumpers. So I'm going to use a random sound effect I found on the board, and we're going to call it a night. Okay, that's not the sound effect I thought it was. I thought it had some like music or something. That's it. We're done. I'm turning the microphone off now.